wrenching the Plague Marine's head from its body. It rolled away down the passageway amidst a shower of dark blood. Corin turned to see that Argus had finally felled another of the Death Guard, carving out its twin hearts with his talons and his combat blade. Gravis had the third pinned against the wall, writhing and belching foul gases as it fought to get free. It was a matter of a moment's work for Corin to part that one's head from its shoulders too. And Gravis allowed the corpse to drop to the ground, still twitching. Argus dropped to his knees before the remains of his fallen brother. He looked up at Corin, still panting for breath.
I will honor him, Captain, by returning his corvaya to the soil of distant Kiavar.
Quickly then, Argus. Do what is necessary to honor our fallen kin.
Argus cupped the bundle of fragile bird skulls suspended from fine chains on Cyrus's belt and gave them a sharp tug, pulling them free. He stood, hastily tying the talismans to the small cluster that hung from his own belt.
Another brother lost in battle. He will not be forgotten.
Corin stepped forward, putting a hand on Argus's shoulder.
Yes, brother. He will not be forgotten. But remember why we are here. The brazen Minotaurs sacrificed an entire company on Empalion II in order to enable the successful completion of our mission. We owe them a debt of honor, and we owe them our lives. Cyrus understood that.
They were silent for a moment.
Now, retrieve his progenoid glands, Argus. Hurry, we don't have much time.
Yes, Captain.
Argus drew a scalpel from his belt and set to work. Corin watched the mouth of the tunnel while Argus carried out the necessary procedure, the means by which their chapter's future would be secured, before carefully secreting Cyrus's gene seed in a pouch at his belt.
Now, help me move his body out of sight.
Corin stooped and took up Cyrus's legs, while Argus hefted the corpse beneath the arms, and silently they deposited it into one of the nearby alcoves in the wall, hidden from view.
A dusty tomb for a hero.
Corin surveyed the carnage all around them, feeling his shoulder twinge with pain. The traitor had obviously done more damage than Corin had initially realized. Not enough, however, to render the limb useless. He turned to face the remaining three members of his squad.
We draw closer to our goal, and closer to the heart of the enemy.
He only hoped that somewhere behind them, Captain Daid of the Brazen Minotaurs could say the same.
Move out.
It's as if someone is leaving us a trail.
Daid stared down at the ruins of a former traitor marine.
A trail marked in blood.
The traitor's wounds were still weeping dark, corrosive blood that scarred the stone floor where it pooled, forming hissing spirals of vapor. This was the fourth scene of its like that they had encountered as they'd passed through the winding tunnels, each of them alike, all lined with tributes to the long-forgotten dead.
Either that, or it is evidence that another faction are indeed here on Kasharat, searching for our price.
Daid nodded. He had yet to decide which he thought it might be. Either way, neither option offered him much comfort. Worse still, he could sense the warp-infested traitors all around him, elsewhere in the tunnels, seething like the poisonous vapor itself, like rodents scuttling about in the darkness. The notion filled him with a sharp sense of disquiet. Something, or someone, had passed this way, tearing through the defenses of the Death Guard to leave a path through the mausoleum complex. Whoever or whatever it was, they had enabled the brazen Minotaurs to pass unmolested into the lair of the enemy. The only question that still concerned Daid was why. It felt somehow wrong that he hadn't yet had cause to bloody his axe.
Captain.
Daid turned to see Bardus watching the passageway behind them, eager for his attention.
What is it, Bardus?
Listen.
Daid concentrated, straining to hear anything in the echoing depths of the mortuary. There it was, a droning, buzzing sound like that of a hovering insect.
I hear it.
Whatever it is, Captain, it's coming this way.
Daid smiled. Perhaps, finally, they had stirred the enemy in their nest.
Brace yourselves. Ready your weapons. I want to be prepared for them when they arrive.
Aye, Captain.
Bardas dropped to one knee and braced himself against the tunnel wall. The air here was thick and syrupy, denser than it had been even on the surface, and it obscured Daid's vision, making it difficult to see what was coming, what diabolical thing was responsible for the noise. He longed for the clean air of Tauron, for the lush green forests filled with prides of the black lions that prowled through the wilds in their thousands. He longed for the hunt, for the feel of one of the great beasts struggling in his arms as he wrestled it to the ground, burying his hunting knife in its heart. He thought then of what the sickening would do to Tauron, and he raised his bolt pistol and power axe in defiance. That was what he fought to protect, to hold the forces of chaos at bay, to protect the Imperium from its terrible taint. Kasharat was already lost, but the weapon he hoped to recover here might prevent other worlds from falling. Whatever it was that had lured them here, down into that vast mortuary complex, Dae knew then that he would defeat it. Something stirred in the swirling mist, but Dae was unable to get any real sense of bearing of how far away the thing actually might be. He trained his bolt pistol on what he took to be the epicenter of the disturbance, but refrained from opening fire without knowing exactly what it was he'd be shooting at. He felt the fine hairs on the back of his neck prickle in anticipation. The mist began to churn. Daid waved his hand to signal the others to remain quiet. He could hear the buzz of rotary engines now, drawing closer by the second. Bast had heard them too, and he raised his bolter in readiness.
Incoming!
Targus strafed left and dropped to one knee, swinging the heavy bolter up onto his shoulder. Seconds later, Daid saw the hellish machines that were responsible for the sound. They burst out of the bank of green vapor, strange hovering contraptions about the size of a man, with twin rotary engines and bulbous fleshy torsos that hung from the metal casings like the bodies of fat maggots. The drones were half machine, half rancid flesh, and they bristled with winking lights and strange mechanical weapons. There were two of them, and they shot down the passageway, propelled at speed by their whirring engines. Daid hefted his axe, preparing to make a swing for one if it came close enough. Beside him, Targus squeezed the trigger on his heavy bolter, and it boomed with explosive force in the confined space, belching an explosive shell at the lead drone. Targus's aim was true, and the bolter shell pierced the soft, fleshy tissue of the machine's torso. It exploded in a shower of glistening pus and mechanical components, its rotors clattering still to the floor. The reverberating sound of the explosion was enough to stir the other brazen minotaurs into action. Bast sent a spray of bolter fire arcing into the air, clattering off the walls as the other drone slid noisily out of the way, churning the green miasma as it shot forward and into their midst.
Keep away from its poisoned blades!
Daid raised his bolt pistol and fired a number of shots into the flank of the bizarre thing, opening puckered wounds that wept like silent, screaming mouths. Targus was furiously loading another round into his heavy bolter, while the others continued to pepper the drone with shot after shot, holding the thing at bay.
Parry, Targus!
Daid glanced back to see Targus raising the weapon onto his shoulder once again. A spray of the machine's pustulant innards spattered over Daid's arm brace, and too late he realized their error. The gloopy stuff began to corrode his power armor almost as soon as it came into contact with the Ceramite, chewing a series of deep pockmarks where it had landed.
Hold your fire!
But his warning came too late. Targus had already pulled the trigger of the heavy bolter. The blight drone exploded in a fountain of acidic pus, showering Bardas in a concentrated burst, covering his golden armor in a spray of the nauseating yellow fluid. He staggered back a few steps as he tried to clear the stuff from his helm, and then realized what was happening as it began to chew its way into the crevices between the armor plating. He held his hand up and cried out in pain as his flesh began to disintegrate inside his armor. The drone itself was a trap, Daeed realized, like a deadly, hovering landmine. The corrosive filth inside it was a weapon, and it was eating away at the joints in Vardas's armor, seeping beneath the ceramite to burn his flesh. There was nothing they could do, no way for them to save him without succumbing to the poison themselves. All they could do was watch as Vardas was slowly, inexorably overcome, until the poison had consumed his body, and he staggered back against the wall, issued a long, pained exhalation, and collapsed into a crumpled heap upon the ground. What was more, the noise of the heavy bolter fire meant they had given themselves away. Now the traitors would know they were there, and so would whoever was responsible for the trail of corpses that had led them this far into the complex. Targus lowered his weapon and pushed past the others to stand over the corpse of his fallen brother. He turned, wordlessly, to look at Daeed.
Vardas is lost, brothers, but we will honor him.
Daeed reached up and unclasped the black lion's pelt that hung around his own shoulders. Foul vapor was now issuing from inside Vardas's armor as the poison burned through his corpse. A section of his helm had been eaten away, and beneath it, Daeed could see the damaged, half-disintegrated remains of his brother's face. Daeed stepped forward, dropped to his haunches, and draped the lion's pelt almost reverently over the corpse, as if it were a death shroud.
He was Lion God. His name will be recorded in the annals of Toron.
He stood, resting his hand upon Targus's pauldron.
There is nothing you could have done. You were not to know.
Targus nodded, but Daeed could see he was grieving for the loss of his brother.
I will avenge him, Captain! On the field of battle, yes. But here, now, we must focus only on the mission. Put all other thoughts from your mind.
Captain!
The voice that interrupted them was insistent over the vox. Daeed turned to see Bast approaching.
We must move swiftly, Captain, before the enemy mobilizes. The noise of the battle will draw them to us. This foul air gives them the advantage. They know the tunnels.
Daeed nodded.
Lead on, Bast. Follow the trail of the dead. One way or another, we will reach our goal.
He started forward, but stopped short when his boot encountered something hard on the ground, which skittered away across the stone floor, clanging off the tunnel wall. Crossing to where it came to rest, Daeed was surprised to see the beaked ebony helm of a space marine. He frowned when he noticed the sheared fragment of spinal column still jutting rudely from the base of the helm, and realized with surprise that the decapitated head of its former owner was still contained within. The wound looked recent. The stump of the neck was bloody and wet.
What is it, Captain?
Thrall came to stand beside him.
I'm not sure.
Daeed turned to glance after Bast, who was already barely visible in the soupy miasma.
But I believe this confirms we have company on Kasharat.
The echo of heavy weapons fire reverberated through the tunnels like the crack of thunder. Corin and his Raven Guard froze in response, each of them attempting to ascertain from which direction the sound had come. It was somewhere up above, a few tunnels away, back towards the surface.
What are they doing? They'll have the whole place down upon us.
The Blight Drones. That is their way. They meet their enemies head on. They look them in the eye before they take their lives. There is honor in that.
They'll be meeting even more of them now. The pox-ridden scum will be swarming through these tunnels in a moment.
Corin nodded.
Yes. We must press on. We must keep the way clear. We're near to the heart of the complex now. There our brothers will find what they're looking for.
I hope it shall prove worth it.
Corin let the comment pass. He knew his brothers were still smarting from the loss of Cyrus. To the Raven Guard, so few, every fallen brother was painfully mourned, every loss keenly felt by all. But on Empelion II, the brazen Minotaurs had helped the Raven Guard to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. They had laid siege to a city under the sway of the Iron Warriors, sacrificing an entire company as a decoy in order to allow the Raven Guard to slip over the walls of the city and destroy the enemy from within. It was that which had brought Corrin to Kasharat, that debt of honor. The brazen Minotaurs, bull-headed and brutal, could never have reached their target alone, and without it, they risked losing the entire conflict to the enemy warband. 7 Imperial worlds had already fallen, and it was Corrin's duty to come to their aid. He would not allow another world to succumb to the sickening. Footsteps pounded in an adjacent passageway. Corrin felt his pulse quicken. They would have to fight their way through from here on in, carving a bloody path through the corpses of the corrupted. It was not, perhaps, how he might have chosen to proceed with their mission. But Corrin had to admit, the notion of spilling more traitorous blood had a certain appeal. Corrin raised his lightning claws, which crackled and sparked in readiness.
Now, brothers, let us see how many of these vile traitors we can destroy.
Forgoing all sense of subtlety, Corrin took the lead, charging out of the mouth of the tunnel and directly into the path of a band of 7 cultists coming in the other direction. His talons flashed, and 3 of them fell before they'd even realized what was happening, torn asunder so violently that it showered Corrin's armor in a dark, fleshy ray. He heard the chatter of bolter fire from behind him, and knew that his brothers were there too, as he cut a swathe along the passageway.
Victorus aut mortis!
Corrin opened up the belly of another cultist before severing a 5th entirely in half at the midriff.
In the name of the Emperor!
Argyr whipped his combat blade around so that it opened a broad gash across the face of a cultist, slicing through flesh and bone alike and felling the foul man where he stood.
For Korax!
As more and more of the cultists spilled forth from the other end of the tunnel, Corrin smiled. He allowed the lust of battle to consume him, to fill his thoughts until he was barely conscious of his own actions, carried along by the ferocious rise and fall of combat, the dance of the Raven. Within minutes, the corridor was filled with a tide of corpses, as if they had somehow washed up here, deposited and abandoned like unwanted flotsam, a torrent of death left in the wake of the living shadows. Corrin, dripping blood from his talons, charged on, allowing his intuition to guide him, crushing the enemy as he led his Raven Guard deeper below ground, down towards the heart of the mortuary complex. When he finally came to rest a short while later, it was beside the entrance to a large subterranean cavern. Here, an ornate doorway had been erected, a vast steepled arch towering above even the Space Marines' heads. It seemed incongruous to Corrin to find such a place at the heart of such a dark, oppressive structure. Immense statues stood proud and silent on either side of the yawning archway, their heads, hands, and feet now vandalized, leaving them deformed and unrecognizable. Their blank faces stared unseeing into eternity. Corrin stepped to one side, pressing himself up against the wall in order to remain out of sight. He glanced round to see Argus's helm looming out of the gloom beside him.
I sense movement inside.
Corrin could tell that Argus was now spoiling for another fight, as if he'd had a taste of battle and was now filled with the rush of it, with the desire to smite the enemy. But Corrin knew it would be wrong for them to go any further. This was no longer their fight.
No.
He shook his head.
This is a battle our brothers should face alone. We should allow them that, at least. The opportunity to defeat the beast in its own lair. We have done what we came here to do. To lead them to their goal, to ease their path to victory as they once did ours. Now, we must leave them to finish it. To taste the blood of their enemies for themselves.
Yes, Captain.
If he was disappointed, he did not allow it to show in his voice.
The Raven's way.
And besides, we need to clear them a path out of here. There are plenty more of those traitorous wretches waiting for us in the tunnels above.
Argus raised his bolt pistol.
I am ready, Captain.
Corin turned and made a hand gesture for the others to follow, and then, silently, the Raven Guard melted once more into the shadows. It had been a bloodbath. Whatever had happened here in this confined tunnel, it had been carnage. Someone, and having found the beaked helm in the passageway above, Taid was beginning to form an idea of who might have been responsible, had ripped through a swarm of enemy cultists, shredding them apart limb from limb, leaving behind a slick mess of body parts and eviscerated corpses. It wasn't so much a bloody trail as the evidence of a massacre. There must have been 30 or more of the corrupted humans, their wretched mutated cadavers already rotting where they had fallen. It was difficult to make out their true number. Their remains were no longer whole enough to be able to judge.
What happened here?
Dai knew it was a rhetorical question, echoing all of their thoughts.
Help! We were wrong to assume we were being led into a trap, or that another foe was engaged in attempting to beat us to our target. Whoever did this, they are allies. Someone is clearing us a path.
Clearing us a path? But who?
There'll be time for that later.
Daid brandished his axe before him to underline his point.
We are close to our goal. I can sense it. We must press on. We must make good on the fortune we have been granted.
He turned and charged off along the passageway, his boots sloshing in the spilled blood of the enemy. The others fell in behind him, and together, the four brazen minotaurs began their final descent into the heart of the enemy labyrinth. It was not long before Daid, following in the wake of his benefactors, located the entrance to the central cavern at the nexus of the mortuary complex. The path had been made clear to him by the grisly trail of fallen cultists. They were heaped against the tunnel walls or spread out upon the ground, in some instances two or three deep at a time. Some of them, he had realized as he thundered down the tunnels, were still alive, scrabbling at his legs as they bled out from terrible wounds or tried to push their spilled organs back into their bodies. He finished many of them as he ran, crushing their skulls with his boots or spreading their infected brains across the walls with a swift shot from his bolt pistol. Now, in the shadow of the enormous archway, surrounded by wispy green mist, Daid stood shoulder to shoulder with his brothers, ready to face whatever, or whoever, was waiting for them in the dank cavern beyond. Without a word, he stalked forward into the gloom, his bolt pistol tracking back and forth, his footsteps ringing out in the cavernous space. Inside, the cave had been dressed to resemble an elaborate temple, with a corridor of ornate marble columns leading to a raised dais, upon which Daid saw, with a quickening of his hearts, their target rested. The supine form of Theseon, the chief librarian of the Brazen Minotaurs. Theseon, apparently unconscious, was lashed to a marble slab, and as Daid watched, a number of human cultists worked strange ministrations over his power armor, splashing unguents across his chest plate and painting runes upon his pauldrons in livid green paint. They were trying, Dai knew, to weaken Theseon so that their psychers could extract the secrets from his mind. He only hoped that Theseon had been able to remain pure during these assaults on both his body and his mind. It had been days since he'd been taken, captured alive on the field of battle, and Daid knew that he had only two options: to kill the librarian before Theseon gave himself up to the creatures of the warp, or to save him and return him to his brothers. He hoped for the latter, but as he entered the grotesque temple, he began to prepare himself for the former. Around them, candles flickered in sconces upon the walls, casting everything in a dull, flickering glow. Between the pillars, the remnants of ancient statues watched forlornly, as Daeed and Targus strode forward, preparing to slaughter the infidels who held their brother captive. But Daeed knew immediately that something was wrong. The cultists hadn't so much as stirred as the brazen Minotaurs had entered the chamber. They hadn't even looked up from their diabolical work at the sound of the Space Marines' thundering footsteps. Where were the guards? Where were the former Death Guard, the traitorous Space Marines of Empyrean's Blight? Surely they would not leave such a precious weapon as Theseon, guarded by mere humans? Daeed's questions were answered a moment later, as he neared the flight of stone steps that led up to the dais. From the darkness, off to his left, he became aware of a wet, rasping laugh, and the sound of footsteps splashing heavily in the poisonous slurry that pooled on the floor. Raising his axe, Daeed turned to see one of the most horrific creatures he had ever encountered emerging from between two of the pillars. It had once been a space marine, but now it was a disgusting, lumbering monster. The remnants of its Terminator armor hung off its twisted, gangrenous flesh, and half of its ribcage was exposed to the elements, allowing Daeed to see through to one of its black, beating hearts. It had swollen to almost twice its original size, and a large, bony horn protruded from the center of its forehead, erupting through the remains of its helm. Acid dribbled freely from the orifice that had once been its mouth, and its respirator had been almost entirely eaten away by corrosion. Necrotic flesh hung in loose strips from between the plates of its ruined armor. In its left fist, it clutched a storm bolter, but its right arm was now a wriggling mass of tentacles, at least six of them, each of them dripping with glistening venom. Strange, repulsive creatures, about the size of rats, scuttled over its body, burrowing in and out of its flesh. The monster was flanked on either side by two plague marines, each of them clutching bolters which were trained on Daeed and his brothers.
For the Emperor!
Daeed wasted no time. With a bellowing roar, he lowered his head and shoulders, raised his power axe, and charged. The creature's storm bolter barked, spewing shells, but Daeed charged on, strafing left and right, and swinging his axe in a wide arc over his head. It connected with the monster's chest, shattering ancient ceramite and ribs indiscriminately, burying itself deep inside the rotten husk of the former space marine. The creature staggered back under the force of the blow, wrenching the shaft of the axe out of Daeed's gauntlets in the process, so that half of the weapon's double-bladed head still protruded from his chest. Then, almost as if the weapon had barely caused a scratch, it came on again, lashing out with its multiple tentacles, gripping Daeed's legs from underneath him so that he fell hard to the floor. Daeed scrabbled for purchase, attempting to lever himself up before the massive bulk of the thing fell upon him. He could hear the chatter of bolter fire from behind him and realized that his brothers had engaged the two plague marines, keeping them busy while he tackled the beast. The creature raised its left leg as if to crush him beneath it, but Daeed rolled, springing up onto his feet. Just as the thing was struck by a blast from Targus's heavy bolter, punching a massive hole in its left side and spilling its rotten innards across the floor, Daeed raised his bolt pistol and pressed forward, shooting openly into the creature's face so that it howled in pain and stumbled back against one of the pillars. Hands shot out from the strange fleshy membrane that covered the pillar, and Daeed realized with disgust that there were humans in it, half subsumed by the gelatinous goo, so that they had become one with the walls, their bodies melding into the organic morass. They clutched the former space marine to them in their fleshy embrace, and it battered them off, lumbering forward, its storm bolter raised. It snapped out a reply to Tarkus' heavy bolter, and Daeed saw his brother reel, shredded by the explosive rounds as they chewed pockmarks in his chest and face. He fell without issuing a sound, his weapon clattering noisily to the ground.
Tarkus!
Roaring in rage and defiance, Daeed rushed forward, his bolt pistol flaring. The creature swung around, its trigger still depressed, and Daeed felt a sharp pain in his left shoulder as a stray shot burst through his armor, blowing out the top of his arm and rendering the limb useless. Warning sigils flared in his helm display, but he charged on regardless, crying out for vengeance, ignoring the pain. Daeed slammed against the rotten bulk of the creature, striking it hard in the face with his good fist. He felt its tentacles lash out in response, curling around his waist and squeezing him with crushing force.
He could smell the thing now, even through his respirator, and its stench was repugnant, the very scent of death itself. Choking as the creature tried to squeeze the life out of him, Daid grabbed for the shaft of his axe, hauling on it with all of his might in an effort to wrench it free. He felt it give as the creature shifted, and he pressed on with renewed vigor, working the blade back and forth until it finally slid free in a spray of sickly ichor. Daid was feeling dizzy now from the sheer force being exerted upon his body. His armor was beginning to crack under the pressure, and he could feel where the creature's acidic spittle was searing his flesh, having burned through the ceramite where it had pattered across his chestplate. He had only moments to act. With a huge effort, Daid raised the axe as high above his head as his good arm would allow him, and then brought it down in a sharp chopping motion, throwing all of his strength behind it. His aim was true, and the blade struck the creature hard in the side of the throat where its acidic discharge had rotted away its armor. The creature lurched backwards, loosening its grip and allowing Daid to drop to the floor. It staggered back, its storm bolter swinging aimlessly. And then, to Daid's relief, its head slid from its shoulders, the last vestiges of its decaying flesh failing to hold it in place any longer. The head struck the stone floor only seconds before the lurching, spasming body. Daid clambered up onto his feet, twisting around to see how his brothers were faring. Thrall was on the ground, his leg shattered at the knee, but with the corpse of a fallen plague marine at his feet. Basp was standing over the toppled remains of the other, still spraying its now obliterated face with bolter fire. Daid staggered over to them.
Targos is lost.
We shall mourn him later.
Daid put a hand on Bast's pauldron to stay his brother's hand. Bast released the trigger of his bolter, and the last echoes of the battle died a few moments later. On the dais, the cultists were working furiously to release the chains that bound Theseon to the marble slab, evidently planning to flee.
Hand me your bolter, brother.
Daid passed his axe to Bast and took his brother's weapon in return. He raised it, took aim, and felled the screaming cultists one by one as they finally acknowledged his presence and bolted for cover, abandoning the librarian where he lay. None of them made it as far as the door.
Bast, see to Thrall. I'll see to Theseon.
Daid crossed the cavern, taking the steps two at a time as he leapt onto the dais. There on the marble slab, Theseon lay unmoving, still wearing his bright blue power armor, which had now been covered in blasphemous scroll. He was still alive, that much was clear to Daid almost immediately, but he had retreated into a Sus'anic coma, disappearing into his own mind in an effort to protect himself and the secrets of his chapter from the foul ministrations of the Death Guard Psykers. Whether he might ever be roused from it, Daid did not know. He hoped it would be so. Theseon's mind was a powerful weapon, and he was needed if the war against the Chaos forces was to be won. But now was not the time for such thoughts. Daid would have to carry the librarian to the surface. He only hoped their mysterious benefactors had thought to consider their escape, too. It was the work of only moments to wrench Theseon free of the chains that bound him. Daid turned to see Thrall, upright, resting on Bast, his shattered leg hanging useless and limp. With a groan of agony at the sharp pain in his left shoulder, Daid hefted the bulk of the supine librarian over his shoulder and staggered towards the door. Their passage to the surface proved relatively uneventful, if painfully slow. There was evidence everywhere of the passing of another party, corpses strewn at every junction, tunnels spattered with the blood of both human cultists and traitorous Death Guard. Once again, it was clear to Daid that someone had seen fit to carve them a path to the surface. With the burden of the injured Thrall and the unconscious Theseon, it was a much-needed reprieve. Above, on the planet's surface, the green mist now swirled thicker than ever, cloying and sickly even through Daid's helm. Trusting his instincts,
He staggered into the haze towards where he believed the Thunderhawk to rest amongst the broken spires of the vast temple complex that bristled across the crust of the Forsaken world. Soon enough, the shadow of the vessel hulked out of the fog to greet them. Daed staggered over to the ship, reaching for the control panel that would release the boarding hatch. But his fingers encountered something unexpected there. He glanced down to see something dangling on the end of a chain that had been draped over the release mechanism. It was a tiny, fragile bird skull, bleached white and stained with spatters of dark blood. The skull of a raven. He had seen their like before, hanging from the belts of fellow space marines, ebon armored warriors of the Raven Guard, whom he had fought beside on Empelion 2. He cupped the totem in his fist, and then thumbed the release control, causing the hatchway to hiss open like a gull's wing.
What is it, Captain?
Bast stood behind him as he held the raven's skull up to the light. It twisted as it dangled on the fine chain.
Hope that we may yet win this war, and a debt repaid.
Daed slipped the totem into a pouch at his belt, and then strode purposefully up the ramp towards the waiting vessel. The brazen Minotaurs would triumph yet in this conflict. They had brother Theseon, and they had help from the most unexpected of quarters. Daed grinned as he dropped Theseon onto a bench and secured him into place with the webbing. He wondered if, even now, the sons of Korax were watching from the shadows. The thought filled him with an unexpected mix of confidence and dread. Seconds later, the hatchway hissed shut once again, and Bast gunned the Thunderhawk's engines. Now, Daed knew, the real battle would begin.
Helion Rain, by George Mann. Performed by Toby Longworth. Amongst the ruination of the ancient scriptorium, a statue of white marble was stirring. Tentatively, the figure came to life, shifting its position to better observe the courtyard on the other side of the broken balustrade. It moved with a practiced silence, resting the nose of its bolt pistol on a fragment of the shattered stairwell, its jaw set firm with grim determination. High above, through the canopy of cracked beams and smashed roof tiles, birds wheeled in an empty sky, punctuated only by the distant heat trails of drop pods bombarding the grassy savannas to the east. The place was shrouded in an eerie cloak of stillness, as if the building itself was somehow holding its breath, waiting for something inevitable to happen. Veteran Sergeant Gravis of the Raven Guard peered around the debris with eyes of pure obsidian, his pale skin stark against the surrounding stonework. The alien was barely visible, even with his augmented senses. Only the occasional alteration in the quality of light or the ghost of movement betrayed its presence in the courtyard at all. He wasn't yet sure if the creature had noticed him, or whether it was toying with him, waiting for him to make his move. Gravis turned his head, slowly, searching for any sign of his scouts. Nothing. He smiled. They were learning. Gravis returned his attention to the courtyard. His finger tensed on the trigger of his weapon. Just a second longer. It moved again. He depressed the trigger, spraying a round of hot bolter fire across the flank of the concealed beast. What followed happened in a blur of movement so swift and so precise that Gravis was almost caught off guard. The Tyranid creature emitted a tortured howl, spinning around with surprising agility and leaping over a ruined wall towards its attacker. Gravis could see now that his instincts had been correct. The thing was a lictor, 3 meters tall, with a hard, pink, chitinous shell and a festering mouth filled with wriggling, writhing proboscides. Its eyes gleamed an angry red and 2 immense bony blades scythed the air above it, the ferocious tips of extra limbs that jutted from its shoulders. Its ribcage was covered in a series of angular barbs that Gravis knew, from experience, were to be avoided at all costs. And it smelled like death. Like the very essence of death itself. It was a scent that Gravis would never forget. Altheon IV would be burned in his memory forever. The creature raised its head towards the sky and howled once again, before stalking forward with menacing intent. It was then that the scriptorium erupted into a cacophony of sound and movement. The report of a shotgun, the chatter of bolters, the sound of boots crunching gravel, the ominous clacking of the lictor's hooves against the broken flagstones. Where previously the only sounds had been the distant cawing of the birds, now the ruined building was filled with the riot of battle. The scouts materialized from the shadows like ghosts stepping between the fabric of worlds. Gray camo cloaks billowing around their shoulders, weapons charged and ready, prepared, as always, for the battle to come. Gravis backed away from the lictor as the others swarmed around it, encircling it, trapping it between them with an ease and discipline that made Gravis's heart sing. Gravis squeezed the trigger of his bolt pistol again, loosing a hail of shots. The lictor thrashed around, unsure in which direction to focus its attack. Gravis offered suppressing fire as Tyrus leapt forward, lopping off one of the lictor's bony limbs with a single easy movement of his combat knife. Green ichor gushed from the wound as the arm fell twitching to the ground. Tyrus fell back to avoid the slashing talon from somewhere above that threatened to decapitate him in retaliation.
Concentrate your fire on its head!
Gravis strode forward, raising his weapon and firing directly into the nest of tentacles that swarmed around the monster's gaping mouth. The lictor screeched in defiance. It lashed out to the left, catching Corbis hard with a flick of its remaining clawed arm, sending him sprawling to the floor, his shotgun spitting wildly into the sky as his aim was knocked askew. He rolled across the flagstones and remained there on the ground, still, his face hidden from view.
Bring it down before he can call for more of its kind.
Gravis moved to the left, trying to close the gap in the circle left by the prone Corbis, all the while keeping his black eyes fixed on the beast, his weapon trained on its head. It wouldn't do to offer the monster an escape route. Lictors hunted alone, but their kind were never far behind. And if they didn't bring it down swiftly, its pheromones would bring swarms of the things down on them. There was a cry from behind the lictor. Avin or Shiel. Gravis couldn't see which, but he could see the creature's barbed tail flick up over its shoulder, blood dripping from the bony protrusions that crested its tip. Another one down. Gravis felt something thunk into his chest plate and cursed for allowing himself to be distracted. He looked down in horror to see one of the lictor's flesh barbs had embedded itself in his armor. Extruded from the alien's chest, the barb was attached to a glistening tendril of thick, ropey flesh. The lictor jerked and Gravis lurched forward, only just managing to retain his footing. The creature was drawing him in, pulling the tendril back inside itself and dragging him closer in the process. Its slavering proboscides, or at least those that still remained after the rounds of bolter fire that Gravis had shot into its face, quivered with anticipation. This is what he had seen on Altheon IV, the horror of what those tendrils could do. He wouldn't let it happen to him. Gravis dropped his bolt pistol and kicked backwards, allowing his feet to come up off the ground and throwing all of his weight against the drag of the lictor's tendril. The barb held, and although the Xenos staggered, it remained firm. It continued to pull Gravis closer. Gravis took a deep breath. His next move was all about timing. Around him, the other scouts were still pounding the lictor with bolter fire and swipes from their combat knives, and he could see it was close to death. Syrupy ichor ran from numerous wounds in its torso, and the air was filled with the stench of scorched bone and seared flesh. But the creature's eyes still burned with fury, and he knew that it would not stop, not until it had burrowed its loathsome bone-tipped probes inside his head and stolen his memories, absorbed all of his thoughts. Death was one thing, a thing he would welcome when the time came, and he knew he had proved himself to the Emperor. But this alien, this monster, it represented something else. The loss of everything he was. He would not allow this creature inside his head. Gravis's feet skittered across the shattered floor of the scriptorium. The creature was close now, so close he could feel the heat of its fetid breath. He flexed his shoulders, readied himself. Then, in one swift movement, he reached up and clasped the grip of his chainsword, tearing it free from its scabbard and thumbing the activation stud. He swung it round before him, at the same time allowing his body to go limp, foregoing all resistance so that he was pulled sharply forward towards the straining lictor. He collided with it, caught for a moment in its bony embrace. For a moment, he thought he saw a flicker of triumph in the alien's eyes as it readied itself to feast on his mind, before it realized the chainsaw was buried to the hilt in its chest, thrumming with power, wedged there by the force of its own trap. The lictor screamed as Gravis forced the chainsword up and out of its torso, ripping through organs and muscles and bones until, at last, the roaring blade burst free, slicing unceremoniously through its neck and finally silencing it forever. The alien wavered for a moment before toppling to one side, Gravis still tangled in a heap of limbs beneath it. "Get me out of here!" he barked at the others, who still stood in a circle around the dead beast, looking on with something approaching awe. Sometimes, in the stillness, the quiet moments of anticipation before a battle, he thought of deliverance. He remembered the clusters of smoldering venting towers erupting from the moon's surface like bristling spines, puncturing the grey regolith to belch oily fumes into the midnight sky. He recalled the constant rumbling beneath his feet, the reverberations of subterranean mining engines, coring out the centre of the tiny world, harvesting minerals to feed the scores of ever-hungry forges and manufactories. He saw the dark, towering monolith of the Ravenspire, silhouetted against the planet light of distant Kievar, and thought of home. He hadn't returned to deliverance for nearly a century, drawn instead by the constant need to protect these outer worlds on the fringes of the Imperium. Or, he smiled grimly, to protect the local human forces from their own incompetence. Perhaps, in truth, there was more to it than that. Perhaps something else was keeping him away. He buried the thought. Idos was a backwater, a long way from that half-remembered home. A world infested with the stink of Xenos, fodder for the enemy spawning pools. Yet Idos had been granted the Emperor's protection, and the Raven Guard were there to ensure that it was enforced. And besides, any opportunity to halt the advance of a Tyranid High Fleet was an opportunity worth taking. He'd fought Tyranids before, back on Altheon IV, and he knew them for the zealous abominations they were, a scourge that needed to be purged. They had infested the galaxy and obliterated innumerable worlds with their insatiable appetite for the raw materials from which they reproduced. They would absorb the biomass of their enemies, remolding their constituent parts into new alien paradigms. Yet the Tyranids were an enemy that he could understand. Their motives were simple, their strategy pure. They wished only to feast on the biomass of a world, to consume it completely, and they would take it through weight of numbers alone, single-minded and devastating. Shadow Captain Aramis Corrin surveyed the ruined landscape before him, the grassy plains covered in straw-like grass, the undulating hills and ridges that formed from the shattered wreckage of Proxima City in the distance. It was too late for this place. He knew that already, an indisputable truth. His Raven Guard would halt the flow of the Xenos, but the planet itself would never recover. Too much had been lost, and the world was far too out on the rim of the Imperium for it to be worthy of rebuilding. The planet's inhabitants knew that too, and that's what had driven them to such desperate measures, using inferior weapons to attempt to destroy the hive ship that hung in planetary orbit, a moon-sized abomination. Their targeting had been off, however, and instead they had inadvertently destroyed their own moon, Helion, splintering the worldlet into a billion fragments that now racked Eidos below with fierce meteor storms and gravitational instability. And all the while, the Xenos kept on coming, an insatiable maw devouring the planet. Corin looked down upon the serried ranks of space marines, their black armor gleaming in the morning sunlight. To his left, bike squadrons formed a protective flank, covering the line of trees in case anything emerged unexpectedly from the forest. To his right, assault squads readied themselves for the coming onslaught, their talons glinting. And between them stood the main bulk of the 4th Company, bolters at the ready. The Raven Guard were few, but they would hold firm. This, to Corin, was yet another indisputable truth. Corin himself stood upon the crest of a hill, resplendent in his ancient armor. It was an antique, worn for millennia by the captains of the 4th Company. Created in the Martian forges before the time of the Great Heresy, it was engraved with the names of all those who had worn it before, had given their lives in honor to the Emperor. A litany for his dead brethren, covering every inch of its pitted black surface. Corin felt the burden of their memory, but also the honor of their company, the pedigree from which he had come. Today he would make his forebears proud. He would honor their memory. And one day his name would be added to theirs, etched onto a pauldron or a leg plate or an arm brace. One day he would give his life in the service of his emperor, and it would be glorious. The thought gave him much comfort. Corin flexed his shoulders. On the horizon he could see the alien swarm approaching, a hazy cloud of buzzing wings, slashing limbs and putrid, slavering jaws. Behind the flared respirator of his helmet, he smiled. Soon his talons would taste alien blood. Gravis kneeled beside Corbis, rolling the young scout over onto his back to check for any signs of life. Behind him, the corpse of the lictor still quivered nervously in its final death throes. Corbis was tall but stocky, with a square jaw and a long, puckered scar running across his cheek from his left eye to his ear. His flesh was already beginning to lose its pinkish hue, becoming pale and translucent, and his hair had darkened to the color of dusk, a sign that his melanchromic organ was mutating. He had the mark of the Raven. Gravis's flesh had long since been bleached by time and experience. His eyes, too, had lost their color, becoming orbs of the purest black, glossy pools of impenetrable darkness. He was older than the others and had seen combat in all its multifarious facets, fought Xenos and traitors alike on myriad worlds throughout the Imperium. It was his role to train the fresh-faced scouts, to shape them into fully-fledged battle brothers, if they managed to survive their training. And Eidos was no simple exercise. The enemy was lurking around every corner. Gravis stood, his boots crunching on the splintered flagstones.
He's breathing.
He walked over to where Tyrus and Avin were standing over the prone form of Shyle, stooping to reclaim his bolt pistol from where he dropped it during the fight. His exposed arms were covered in lacerations and scars, as well as ichor and bodily fluids spilled from the chest of the lictor when he had brought it down.
He's dead, Sergeant,
Tyrus said without turning his head away from the body of his fallen brother. Gravis glanced at the corpse. He most certainly was. Half of his face was missing from where the lictor's whip-like tail had caught him beneath the chin, crushing his jaw and pulping his right eye socket at the same time. His other eye remained open, as if staring expectantly at Tyrus, willing him to do something more. Dark blood was seeping out over the grey stone floor, forming glossy pools in the midday sun.
He was probably dead before he hit the ground.
Gravis dropped to his haunches beside the body. Chael's camo cloak was wrapped around his fallen body like some sort of funerary shroud. Gravis pulled it back to reveal the black armor beneath. The scout's belt was adorned with the skulls of Kyrvarian ravens, tiny yellowing heads with long curved beaks, tied in a little cluster to a thin silver chain. These totems, these corvaea, were tokens of honor and skill. They were a representation of the raven spirit and a symbol of their homeworld. They were a measure of the scout's aptitude and stealth, a part of the initiation rites through which Shael had given himself over to the Emperor to become an Astartes. Each initiate would prove their cunning by catching these birds in the great woodlands of Kyrvar, moving so silently amongst the lush flora that they could grab the avian where it perched, taking it with their bare hands and gently breaking its neck. It took months of practice and great skill to be light enough on their feet and swift enough in their movements to grab the bird before it fluttered away. Gravis cupped the bundle of tiny skulls in his fist and pulled them free of the dead Space Marine's belt. He looked up at the others.
Who will carry his corvaea?
Tyrus stepped forward.
I would be honored, Sergeant.
Gravis gave a swift, sharp nod and handed the totems over to the other scout.
Then remember that you carry with you his honor also. He will rest when you return them to the soil from whence they came.
The others waited in silence while Tyrus affixed the skulls to his belt beside his own. Gravis turned to see Corbis climbing to his feet, rubbing his neck.
You took your time.
Without warning, the vox bead in his ear sputtered to life with a hissing burst of static.
Sergeant Gravis.
Captain Corrin.
State your position, Sergeant.
We're on the eastern fringe of the city, Captain. Approximately 10 kilometers from the main engagement, just inside the Administratum complex.
The vox went silent for a moment.
Captain?
When he spoke again, Corrin sounded distracted.
Gravis, there's a power station 3 kilometers north of your position. I need you to destroy it.
Gravis frowned.
Destroy it?
Yes, and don't leave anything standing. Cause the biggest explosion you can.
But we don't have any explosives, Captain.
Then be creative, Brother Gravis.
Yes, Captain.
And Sergeant?
Captain?
Be swift.
The link went dead. Gravis pulled his Auspex from his belt and consulted the readout. 3 kilometers of rubble and wreckage stood between them and the power station, not to mention the risk of lurking enemy and ripper swarms mopping up the dead. And he had no idea how they were going to destroy a power station with only bolt pistols and combat knives. It would be a test of their mettle, and a test of his training. Gravis glanced up at the expectant faces of his scouts.
Our mission parameters have changed,
he said, unable to contain the wide grin that was now splitting his face.